Hello, and welcome to another interview here on the Youth Theater Podcast. I'm your host for the week, Nick Nagchowdhury. Our guest today is an actress who you may have seen in the Broadway companies of Matilda the Musical as Mrs. Wormwood or Rock of Ages as Sherry Christian. She's also hit the big screen in films such as Straight Outta Oz and Hairspray. Cassie Silva is with us today. Cassie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
All right, let's go back to the very beginning. When did you know you wanted to do theater for a living? When did the theater-loving bug bite you?
Well, there's a couple of defining moments. I like to say that I was born with this gift in my heart, and I also use this silly rhyme, which is, in my heart is where art starts, and that's how it felt for me for my entire life. And so I was always performing. I would get up in front of the TV and my family would play movie musicals and I would learn the choreography and then I would stand in front of the TV while they were trying to watch it. And I would do the whole entire production. And I've never met a stranger, so I loved talking to people. I loved talking, period. And when I got a bit older, I had a moment where I saw my big sister in a production of West Side Story, and there were two actresses that played the Anita and the Maria. And I remember two distinct moments. One was when Anita sings this song called A Boy Like That. And I got so impassioned, and it surprised me because I was really young and I didn't know how I was able to feel what she was feeling from the audience. And then there's another big moment at the end of the show where the character Maria has a very emotional moment. And I remember it tugged on my heartstrings. It made me cry. And I left that theater, and that was pretty much when the bug hit me big. And I thought, wow, I don't know how they were able to make me feel that way with their performances, but I want to be able to do that too.
I see. So how did you slowly start becoming more involved in theater at a young age?
Well, I didn't do a lot of musical theater growing up. I initially started as a dancer. I danced outside my sister's dance room when I was 2 and she was 9. And the owner of the studio said that if I could get potty trained by summer, she would allow me to come and take the summer dance camp. And for a 2-year-old, that seemed to be a pretty good incentive. And so I got potty trained and they let me into the camp. And from there, I mean, the rest is really history. I did a lot of musical theater dancing. So not necessarily full productions, but a lot of musicals were played at the dance studio that I grew up at. And I was also competitive. So I would do a lot of theatrical type dances or a single song. And I just loved playing the characters and lip syncing along and the costumes and the makeup. And I did that my entire life. I started competing when I was 6 years old, all the way through high school.
That's so cool. So as you slowly started getting more into show-based theater, what was the most memorable show you've been a part of and why?
That's a really great question. I'm really excited to tell you the answer. So there was a show that I did called the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. And like I had just mentioned, I grew up dancing primarily. And why I really liked doing Spelling Bee was that it was a show that had a big component, which was improv. And so that means that we had to make up a lot of stuff on the spot. Some of the show isn't written. And some of it we got to write ourselves. Like I got to write a monologue so that, you know, the show stays current with the times. And then the rest of the show is written and it goes on as if it's a regular production. And that show was the very first show that I did. I didn't rely on my dancing anymore. I was singing and acting and I felt really present. And it was the first time that I really understood that I had self-confidence enough to act and sing without the dancing, because up until then, all of the roles that I had played were very dance heavy and technical. So I really liked that show. Also, I got to play a 10-year-old, and I was certainly not 10. And I wore these big red glasses and pigtails right at the, they looked like bull horns, but they were like big braids. And she has a lisp, and she would talk like this. All the entire show, she would just talk like this. And I just had the best time portraying her. She was also the first character that I missed when the show closed. It was as if I lost a best friend or something. I just kind of missed her for the weeks after.
Yeah, I can totally feel that. You felt that this was, you know, your true big leap into musical theater?
Yeah.
What is your favorite memory of theater as a student?
Oh my goodness. What is my favorite memory of theater at all? Out of all theater?
Sure, go for it.
Gosh. Let me think. My favorite memory of all theater. I think I want to say when I was really little, kind of in the vein of how I had like the bug moment. It was taking production of Beauty and the Beast, and all of the plates and all of the big utensils came out, and it just was so much bigger and like larger than life. And I just hold that so close to my heart. That one really opened my eyes to what was possible. And impossible was possible. It was very cool.
Now, growing up, who were your role models in acting, dancing, and theater in general?
Oh my goodness. Well, I really loved Bebe Neuwirth and Bernadette Peters. I'm a big Barbra Streisand fan. My mom would play Barbra Streisand in our big Astro van that she drove all of my siblings around in. And she would play Celine Dion and Barbra Streisand. And that was how I learned to sing, because I would just impersonate them. And if you're going to impersonate anybody vocally, those aren't bad choices. So, I watched all of Barbra Streisand's movies, and I was a huge fan of Shirley Temple, actually. And I also, not many people know about the old-fashioned Little Rascals. There was, like, before there was, well, it's old now, but a really long time ago, there was a series of these Little Rascals films, and some of them were musical, and they were in black and white. It was that old. And so I loved watching those, and they would inspire me. Other than that, I would say Grease, like John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John, all of those actors are so good. And that was one of the movies that I used to perform in front of the TV.
So are all of these people still your role models?
Absolutely. And I think that's part of, for me, that's part of what being a role model is having longevity, having a long career, being able to reinvent and remain positive and empowering and inspiring through the years, not just today or a few years ago or things like that.
Totally. So let's go back to the present. Currently, you are working in multiple fields of show business, such as theater, TV, and film. So how does it feel to constantly switch between these different types of performances?
It feels really fun. I will share with you that when I was younger, I didn't understand the difference between TV and film and theater. And I don't think that at all anymore. A way that I try to remember that is if you take your fingers and you put, you know, your thumb to your pointer finger and your pointer finger to your thumb, you connect both of them, you sort of make a rectangle. This is the size that you're working within when you're in TV and film. And when you're on Broadway or you're on a stage, the rectangle is the stage you're on, and it's obviously much bigger. The box is huge. And so I really enjoy being able to play within a bigger space and tell stories that way, and connect all the way to the last seat in the house on stage. And then when I get to do things like TV and film, or even voiceover where there's, you know, no camera, it's something that's animated or something like that, I like to really, I'm just such a dramatic, emotional person, right? And so I really like finding the nuance and the details, because, you know, where you could sharply look to the side in theater, all you would be doing on TV and film is maybe just shifting your eyes. And I really find that super interesting. So it's nice to go back and forth, because it keeps me on my toes, and I never want to be bored. I always want to stay curious.
That's cool. So now, going into two fields that you work in, I wanted to ask a little bit about production for the work you've done on screen, that is, sure, film and TV shows. So you've acted in many films like Hairspray and Straight Outta Oz, as well as TV series like Dexter and Still Standing. Mm-hmm. So what are the similarities between such productions?
Well, I will say I'm a very lucky actor, because I have played so many different genres and eras, and the projects that I get to work with, they are all very different from each other. Although I do play a lot of mean girls, I will say. And that's really fun too, because I'm not mean. so I really like to drop into those types of characters now. What do all of my TV and film projects have in common? That's the question, right? I think they all have a sense of confidence and preparation. When I auditioned for all of those, my heart was so full, and I was so excited to be in the audition. And I remember when I got the part, it felt really right. It felt like, oh, I'm so thrilled. Right, when you get any part, it's usually very exciting.
Sure.
But and all of the shows that I did get, I really felt confident about them. I really felt good about myself in those roles, and also that I think that helped being on set, because there's a saying in TV and film, which is hurry up and wait. So there's a lot of downtime. It's not like theater where once you have the downbeat of the show, it goes, right? When you're doing stuff like TV and film, there's a lot of time to be hanging out. So I think all of them shared a really positive and nurturing atmosphere too. Again, I'm really lucky. I'm really lucky to have had the career that I've had. And some of the projects that you didn't mention, I did when I was really young. Like I said, I started dancing when I was 2. I got into TV and film when I was 6. Commercial when I was 6, and I have done shows for Nickelodeon and other networks, but among those, I think there's like a family atmosphere, and that was something that was a real through line, that you make these like families, if you will.
Yeah. So now, what are the differences between the production of film and TV shows?
Ooh, between the mediums of TV and film, or just the different projects?
I'd say the mediums.
Ooh. These are such good questions. They're really stretching my mind, and I love talking about this. So film, you have a story, and you have it from start to finish. And you sort of can have those arcs, or that rainbow effect, if you will. With TV and film, sometimes if you're on a recurring show, those scripts aren't necessarily written come episode 1. And you're working off of a story that people obviously know because it's planned, but you're way more on your feet. And you have to be ready at any point of time to change a line or to completely reblock something. Okay. So film, you know, from start to finish. So you can really craft those characters. TV and film, you're sort of building and crafting the character, and it's a constant exercise. Like I said, like there's, it almost feels like there's an element of improv in it.
All right. So I'm going to ask you a really interesting question.
Great.
If you could time travel to any time or go anywhere in the world to have a conversation with one person, who would it be and why?
Oh my goodness. Well, I would go and meet Einstein because I love Einstein. I have this really great picture of Einstein. It's in black and white, and he's sitting on a porch with his legs crossed, and he's wearing fuzzy slippers, like these shaggy fuzzy slippers, and his hair is all wiry. I just think he's such a fascinating character, and I would just love to pick his brain because there's so much that that he contributed to our world that we still use today. And I also know a fun fact about him, that E equals MC squared came to him as like a flash of light. He was pondering something, and then all of a sudden it just hit him in a moment. And he thought E equals MC squared. And that's how he discovered it. I'm sure that there's a fancier way of explaining it, but it's a fun fact for today.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that. So now I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, you know, how exactly you act. You know, you get a script, you play a character, and then there's a whole process. So how do you get to know your character, and how does that reflect your portrayal of that character?
Another great question. You should be an interviewer. Well, each project is different. So first of all, I read my script at least three times. If there's a movie of the or let's say a TV show or a book or something like that, I will sometimes watch or read or get myself involved with those things just to get information. I love to do research. So I Google till the cows come home, and I look up if it's an original project. Obviously it's a different process because you can't just go Googling a bunch of stuff. But if it's a show that's already withstanding, then I like to see who's working on it, who has worked on it, what they've done. And then I go through, and I won't bore you with all of this, but one thing that I do is I like to write little I am statements. So once I've read through it, I start thinking about the character as if I'm the character, and I'll write something like, I am funny, right? If it's a comedic character, I'm funny. Or if she's mean, like, I'm mean, or I'm overconfident, or I'm self-righteous. Because those really help me to connect with what I'm working with. And then I like to go through the entire thing, and I like to write out my beats. Beats are like stop signs or punctuation within the script, so that then it helps me break down just smaller pieces of the script so that it's not just one big thing. And then it's easier for me to find what they call an arc, which is how you start and then everything that happens until you finish. And so that's another important thing that I try to figure out from the get-go. But there's so many different things. And what I really, really love about acting is that each show presents a different way of getting in. But I have all kinds of things. I've made playlists, especially if it's an era or something like that. You know, I'll make, if it's like something like Hairspray, I'd make a 60s playlist of authentic music from that time. What were those characters listening to? Or I'll look up books that were popular back then, and I'll read some of those just to get my mind around the the climate and what was going on then. There's all kinds of really, really fun. Oh, one that I really love is that I'm a visual learner. So I use this app called Pinterest. You may know it. And it's basically like Google, but pictures. And, you know, I title it and I make it secret. But then I go through, and I've done this for so many roles. This is a tool that I use often. I go through and I'll look up things like overconfidence, or like, what does that look like in an image? Or let's stay on hairspray. Like, if it's the 60s, you know, I'll pin some of the wardrobe that they wore, or some of the album covers that were out at that time. And I just start to really frame myself in that time period or in that show.
Wow, it seems that you get really invested into the character and the story as a whole. That's awesome.
I love it.
Yeah. So, going a little further, how do you exactly comprehend your character's goals or their inner longings?
That's a really great question. Some of that, I think, takes place privately, like when I'm teaching or directing or things like that. I call them the treasure chest. My mentor and acting teacher used to call them secrets. And those are things that are just for me, and they help me to get much deeper. It's a very intimate conversation. So it's getting quiet with myself and really, really asking, you know, harder questions. Like, if somebody's parent has died or something, you know, I really sit there and I try to empathize, because that to me is the key for me, is empathy and compassion, is really trying to feel what that might feel like. And that's the road that I start to go down. So yeah, little treasures, and some of it does take place in the rehearsal room, you know, interacting with your director and choreographer and music director. And each element that you add, meaning the other actors, or maybe a costume, or different pieces of the band that come in, or maybe an orchestra, all of those inform. So the great thing about theater is that it moves pretty fast, but you do get time to really sink into those things and delve. But for me, it's a quiet process.
It's very interesting. So now I'm going to shift over to a term that is, I'm sure it's common to you, it's common to me, it's common to almost everyone: stage fright. What is your method of getting rid of stage fright?
Breathe. And I practice this grounding tool where I look around the room or the stage or wherever, and I just call things out. Like, if I'm really spinning off stage, I've gotten really nervous before, I just will look around and I'll say, okay, computer, screen, blue headphones, red microphone with an X through it. And that really just helps, like, ground me back into the present moment. And taking nice, slow, deep breaths, it helps inform my system that I'm safe and that everything's good. And I also know that excitement and nervousness are the same thing. So I give myself that choice. I can either take the emotion and the feelings, and there's a fork in the road. I either am going to choose to be nervous about it, or I'm going to choose to be excited about it. And if I'm really, really nervous, then I choose nervous, and I allow myself to just be nervous. And sometimes that seems to be enough. Sometimes I just need to tell myself, yeah, I'm really nervous. And then I just feel my feeling. But feelings aren't facts. And so pretty often that helps chill me out. Plus, once I get on stage, for me, I feel like I'm at home. So I love being on stage. I love seeing the audience.
Yeah, I can totally feel that. So now I'm shifting again to one of your big breaks, where you played Mrs. Wormwood as on the national tour of Matilda the Musical. What was that like?
Funny. It was very funny and fun. Contrast to the character Mrs. Wormwood, I love kids and I love working with kids. So it was a dream come true to be able to work with so many kids. And I took it as a big responsibility that even though I was playing this evil woman, that I would still create this safe and playful space for the young kids that I was working with. So I always made sure that I was smiling at them and had little handshakes with them and just took moments here and there to say, hey, you know, I may look like a mean clown, but everything's cool over here, you know? And I learned that they really liked to play too. And traveling around and meeting so many people is one of my favorite things. So getting to meet hundreds of thousands of people all over was really special, especially as that character who's so beloved and just so evil.
I believe there were three girls who played Matilda, right?
On the tour, and on Broadway there were four.
Ah, I see. So what was it, so when you were working with three different people who played Matilda, mm-hmm. what was that like, switching between the three of them?
Well, I guess it would be the difference between anything that you have three of. They're all completely different. And that for me was really fun because it kept things super interesting, and they never did two shows in a row, I think, if we could help it. They always switched out. So every single show, and we do eight shows a week. I did eight shows a week on Broadway and on tour. Every show you have another Matilda, so it really keeps it fresh. And depending on which one, you know, some are a little more, some hold a little more of a darker edge to the character Matilda. Some of them hold a little more of the loneliness of her. And so I found that really fun to play with, but it's different. It's really different.
So would you have to change your version of Mrs. Wormwood to match with their version of Matilda per se?
Well, our team did such a great job. Well, I say they were different. Our team was amazing. And so a lot of the big stuff, essentially the same. I'm talking more about the details and nuance, the stuff that, you know, is like front row seat type of things. Sometimes they just would inform me. They would inform me in the present moment. So, like I said, if one was a little more boisterous that day, as any actor that you get on stage with, it would inform me. But I guess the thinking behind the character was always the same. It just was a little bit of a thinking change. Meaning some days I would think, oh, that brat as Mrs. Wormwood, right? And some days I'd be more annoyed, right? And I'd be like, ugh, how dare she? Or something like that. I don't know. I think of crazy things in my head when I'm crazy characters.
I see. So what do you believe is the best advice you have received?
The best advice that I've received is to always say thank you. Always lead with love and gratitude. If thank you is the only thing that you say, that is enough. You never know what road somebody's on or what somebody's going through or how their day is. And so the fact that I get to play really funny characters for a job is really special, and I don't take that for granted. And I'm just really grateful. And having such a long career, I mean, all the way from when I was a kid, I always felt like that was the one thing that people continuously told me, that and like smile or things like that. But in so many words, many, many people along the way just said, just remain polite, remain thankful, say thank you, send thank you cards, be gracious. Have gratitude. So that's what I'd say. It's my answer.
Now, on the topic of advice, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give, or what would you tell your teenage self?
I would tell my teenage self that everything is all right and to go for the gold. Because I was such a big personality when I was a teenager, maybe too much for my own good. And I think that I really wanted to be more more external than I let myself on to. So I would just say, go, girl, do it.
I can definitely relate to that myself. How do you handle criticism for your works?
Well, it goes back to what I was just talking about. I just say thank you. I once heard that you can always tell if you're doing a really great job if you have both sides. So if you have a polarized view. So if I've done a really great job, that means that some people are going to love me and some people are, I am not their cup of tea. And that's good because especially in theater for me, my job is to portray characters and to tell stories. If it's personal, it's along the same lines where it's just being thankful for the feedback and being able to be a catalyst for somebody to either say, I don't like this, or I do like this. It's really none of my business, too. So I used to get really down about stuff like that. I actually did a project when I was much younger, and I was really bullied a lot, and people really loved me, and then some people really did not like me. And again, it was that fork in the road of, you know, do I want to be nervous or excited? You know, am I going to stay in gratitude or am I going to take it and believe it? And even though it got really hard at points, I still just told myself that it was a good thing because my job as a storyteller is to emote, is to help people feel something. And so again, it doesn't really matter what they feel. I've done my job, if they're feeling at all.
So now, how do you stay mentally healthy and stable in an industry where no is a pretty common response?
That's another, these are such great questions. I'm so enjoying this. Well, a lot of things, but what I want to talk about is meditation. I like to, again, just get quiet or close my eyes and take a few minutes, and sometimes a long time, but I started doing that years ago and it really just helped calm me down and get present and find gratitude. Again, like speaking of gratitude, sometimes I make a gratitude list where even if I'm down, I just start writing things that I'm grateful for. I'm grateful that my heart's beating. I'm grateful that I'm alive today. I'm grateful that I get to speak with you. I'm grateful that I can smile today, right? And then it grows upon itself. Also, I really believe in something as simple as taking a walk. I think that really helps shift the mind, especially when I'm working on a show, but even just every day, especially while we're all stuck inside, even just taking a short walk, even if it's just around my apartment, sometimes just shifting that scenery or that perspective really helps. But if I'm getting outside, I like to breathe fresh air through my mask. And also listening to music. I really, really love listening to music. And I like uplifting music that speaks to my heart and uplifts me, empowers me, and inspires me so that I can sing along or dance along, which especially because we haven't been able to go out, I do a lot of dancing. And it helps me to keep mentally stable and still and healthy. Also just exercise. Like I said, dance parties are great, but also I like to do a lot of physical exercise. Like I said, I'm a dancer, so my body really likes doing a lot of physical activity, and it helps keep me sane.
What do you think are some of the hardest things about a professional life in the performing arts?
Well, I would agree with you. You get a lot of no's, So there's a lot that comes up around self-confidence and self-esteem and really feeling like you have a gift to offer and not letting that wither or losing that along the way. I think that's really important. What else? Well, one thing is that when you're doing a Broadway show or a tour, you're doing 8 shows a week. And so physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, it's very tolling and taxing. And I have a lot of energy. It's my dream come true. So I was always really happy and grateful to be on stage. But the truth of it is that it is a lot of work. And you still have rehearsals while you're doing 8 shows a week. So really understanding how to use those tools, like I mentioned, about really staying mentally stable and safe, and also just doing stuff that's fun too, to offset some of the rejection that you get or the work that you're putting in. I think those are helpful.
All right. So now back to the brighter side of, you know, a career in the performing arts, specifically yours. What do you think is the greatest accomplishment in your career?
Oh, wow. There are so many. What is my greatest accomplishment in my career? I think it was probably getting the role of Mrs. Wormwood. I mean, I don't want to sound cliche about it, but that was such an epic moment for me. It comes with a fun story, which I want to share with you. So I initially went into Matilda on Broadway as the cook, and I was a replacement, which means that somebody was already in the show and she moved over to another show, and so they needed to replace her. And so I auditioned, and I had auditioned for the show before and I didn't get it. But I auditioned again, like I had mentioned, there are 4 Matildas on Broadway, and every 6 months or so, the old Matildas or the current Matildas would transition out and new Matildas would transition in. So I was going in with a set of Matildas, and they do what's called a put-in, which means everybody in the show comes, nobody wears costumes, they all wear mics, but you, the person that's being put into the show, get to run the entire show from top to bottom with all the props and all the sets and all the costumes so that you can practice quick changes and lighting cues and safety things. Like in Matilda, there's a lot of safety stuff. And you're the only one in costume. Nobody else is in costume. So it's a very funny, fun thing. One of the weeks, so there were 4 Matildas. I'm trying to not make this complicated. There were 4 Matildas, which means that we had 4 put in so that each of them could do the show in its entirety before they did it for an audience. Well, one of those shows, I did my regular track of the cook in so that I could go into the show and do the part that I was cast in. But the role of Mrs. Wormwood was a role that I understudied. And so very shortly thereafter, remember, 4 Matildas, the first week I did the role that I went into the show. Well, by the 4th one, I think it was the 3rd or the 4th, I was being put into Mrs. Wormwood. So I had to learn that second role really fast. And I worked really hard on it. I really did. I put my whole heart into it. And when I did my put in, one of the creatives just happened to think that I might be good enough to come audition for the tour. So they offered me an audition for the tour. And I had just gotten into the Broadway show. So I often joke that I thought to myself, I don't even know my lines yet. I'm barely, you know, remembering what I'm supposed to do in the first place. But it also, if you can imagine, was really nerve-wracking to go into the audition for Mrs. Wormwood for the tour, because I was in the Broadway show and I really wanted to show them that I respected their work and the show, and that I wasn't just blowing it off and having an attitude like, I'm in the show, so I don't have to do anything. And so I went in and I remember just giving my all and feeling like, have you ever had this feeling where sometimes you're so in it that you almost get nervous that maybe it was too much?
Yeah, all the time.
So that's how I felt. And so when I walked out, I thought, well, either I did great or they think I'm crazy. And maybe it's not bad if they think I'm crazy, because so is Mrs. Wormwood. But yeah, I learned that I got the tour very shortly thereafter I actually got into the Broadway show. And so that for me was just so big, because I went from being in the ensemble to being a lead. And to tie in, you know, stuff from this interview, I had started as a dancer, and then I had that big moment where I then became confident in my singing and acting. Fast forward to then being able to play this leading role where there's tons of acting and tons of singing, big singing. And also I got to do my first love, which was dance. There was a big dance number. So it just felt like such an achievement. And I was in so much disbelief. I mean, I could barely tell my loved ones. Like, I couldn't believe it.
That's so cool. It must have been a really exciting moment for you. So is there a dream role that you have that you hope to play someday?
Oh my gosh, yes. Okay, so let's discuss. I really want to play Katherine Howard in musical Six. That would be so fun. I love hot pink, and she wears hot pink. I also would love to play Elphaba in Wicked. That just seems like, it just makes, I'm getting so smiley about it. I just love that show. I love that role. It's so inspiring. And I also like the challenge of it, because it's, you know, technically one of the most difficult, if not the most difficult, female role on Broadway. So that would just be cool to do, to say you did it. And then when I get older, well, I guess I could play her now. Dot in Sondheim Sunday in the Park with George. Like I had mentioned, I love Bernadette Peters. And she did the show on Broadway with Mandy Patinkin. And then the revival, Anna Leigh Ashford and Jake Gyllenhaal played George and Dot. And it's just such a special role. And she's so quirky. And I just love that role. So I would love to play Dot one day.
Those seem pretty cool. I mean, I've definitely heard of Six and Wicked, but I am sure these roles would fit you.
Thanks.
So if you didn't work in the show industry, what would you see yourself doing for work?
Well, I love what I do. I'm so lucky. I've been asked this question before. I like to choose all types of different things. I really like space and time. And like I said, I love Einstein. So I always thought that astronomy might be really cool. Maybe I could be a rocket scientist or a mathematician or something, or a scientist, like a mad scientist. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's the one that feels right today. Maybe an astronaut. That'd be cool.
That would be cool. Imagine you being an astronaut. That would,
right?
Yeah. I want to talk about the current times we're in. Obviously, you were aware of the coronavirus pandemic.
Right.
I'm sure you are.
Yes.
What is the role of performing artists during these times?
This is a question that's been getting asked so much. I don't know. I think it's ever changing. But what my hope is that when we're able to get back into theaters one day, we're going to be so hungry for stories and escapism and and laughter and communion and connection. That's my hope. But what I will say is that on a positive note, I've seen so many cool creations. People are getting so creative. I know that being in this pandemic has helped me come out of my shell more than I ever imagined. And just putting my art out there and really understanding that it's a gift and that it can be used to be of service to people that may just need, you know, they may need to hear a silly song that day, or it could just brighten anybody's day. And so it's been encouraging in that respect. But of course, it's a big wah-wah. And I know that a lot of friends in the Broadway community, this is a really difficult time. But I like to sway on the side of hope. I like to stay hopeful.
What is your way of upholding theater and artistic values during a pandemic?
Well, creating different things, for one. Also, what I've been able to do is a lot of Zoom classes. So keeping things going that way has been so valuable. I've taught anything from master classes to college students, to workshops, to panels, to seminars, to just mentoring sessions. And yeah, that's been so valuable, and that's how I've really upheld theater at this time.
How have you been dealing with the quarantine in general?
I'm doing very well, all things considered.
Mm-hmm. Are there any new hobbies you've picked up, perhaps?
Oh my goodness! Yes? I'm picking up guitar again, which is great. I don't really play the guitar, but I'm getting better, to answer your question, because of the pandemic. Also, just singing. Like, I have started to learn so much more music, and also I've been reading a lot of musical scripts and listening to musical albums, so that's really helped to stretch me out as well. And it's really fun.
Is there anything else that you are currently working on, show-wise or just in general?
I'm always working on a bunch of stuff. I have some things in the works that I can't quite talk about yet. But I do have a web series that's coming out in the fall, so I've gotten to do some fun stuff during quarantine, like remote ADR, which is like, you know, doing voiceover over the film that they have, and getting to like change my voice, and really, really fun. Yeah.
That's so cool. Now, this is just something that I was curious. Do you have any play or musical that is your personal favorite? If so, which one and why?
Ooh. This is the hardest of them all. I mean, I would like to say Sunday in the Park with George. It's just so great. I also just can't stop with the Waitress soundtrack. It's just so good. I just love it so much. Any of my students will probably tell you that their ears are bleeding with Waitress, the musical. Because I love it. I love that, and I love the Dear Evan Hansen soundtrack as well. But in entirety, I really love the show Gypsy, and I really love the show Sunday in the Park with George. That was four. I'm sorry. It's just so hard to pick.
Yeah, I know. Everyone faces that dilemma. It is really hard. Now I'm going to ask you the same question, except do you have any film that is your favorite? If so, which one and why?
Ooh, I'm a huge Wes Anderson fan. So, you are? Oh my gosh!
I am!
Yes!
My favorite movies is the Grand Budapest Hotel.
I was just going to say the Grand Budapest Hotel is one of my all-time favorite movies.
It's one of my best. And then Isle Dogs, which came out one or 2 years ago. I really loved it. The way he just creates, it's awesome.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. Yes, I love Wes Anderson. I feel like he really ties in like a theatrical feel too. So maybe that's why I just resonate with it so much. What else? I mean, again, huge fan of Grease. There are just so many. I think I'll stick with the Wes Anderson ones for now. Oh, Singing in the Rain, another one that I just never gets old. And also Willy Wonka, the Gene Wilder version. No offense, Johnny Depp.
I see. As for me, I personally like the newer version better, but I also enjoy the original one. So, to top things off, is there anything you would like to say to the listeners of this podcast? You know, something to keep the show spirit in them alive.
Yes. Theater will always be around, and being able to tell stories, whether it be on a stage or on social media or even just in your backyard or your living room, is really important. It's really important to stay moving. It's really important to keep singing. It's just good for our well-being, and sharing that with somebody is the most important thing. You know, you can do a show for one. You could do it for your stuffed animals too. But theater will be back. It's going nowhere. It's one of the oldest art forms. And we're going to make it. We're going to be all right.
All right. That's all I have. Thank you so much, Cassie, for your time. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
It's been such a joy to speak with you. Thank you. You're an awesome interviewer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're going to keep things interesting and save next week's guest as a surprise. Check in next Wednesday for a mystery industry professional interviewed by Carolyn Heaney right here on the Youth Theater Podcast. The Youth Theater Podcast is made possible through your support, so visit anchor.fm/youththeater, that's theater with a T-R-E, to become a supporter today. Now picture this, Nick:, space. For Youth Theater Podcast, this is Nick Nag Chowdhury signing off.